Hey, has lichen sclerosis messed with your relationships? You know, partner, family, friends, even at work? Then you need to join us at the Holistic Healing Summit this May 13th to the 17th, because we're bringing all the experts. We're going to be talking about intimacy, sex, as well as how do you talk to your family, friends, provider, boss? All of those things. And this is a free event, live, virtually, so you can catch it anywhere in the world, May 13th to the 17th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. We've got sessions going on all day. Get more information at lssupportnetwork.org/WHS. That's lssupportnetwork.org/WHS.
Hey, welcome. Thank you for coming to listen to the Lichen Sclerosis Podcast. My name is Kathy, and this is our journal of learning about and living with lichen sclerosis. Each week, I research an aspect of lichen sclerosis and bring you the information so you don't have to go searching. Because like you, I have lichen sclerosis, and we shouldn't have to go scrubbing the internet to find what we need. This week, we're going to hear from one of our lichen sclerosis sisters. Her story is a story of love, one of love for herself, and finally, one of romantic love. So if you've ever thought, am I ever going to be able to have a healthy, normal relationship, even though I have LS? The answer is yes. Yes, you will. Yes, you can. But it's going to take some work. And Carrie Bach put in the hours, she did the time, and she got the reward at the end. And so I'm so excited for you to hear her story on this episode of Lichen Sclerosis Podcast. Carrie, thank you so much for being here today. I'm so excited. I want to hear everything about your story. I also want to touch a little bit on what you do, because I think that is going to impact a lot of my listeners. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a real treat.
Let's start from the beginning. When did you notice something was wrong, or when did you start feeling symptoms?
I always had, even from a young age, a struggle with tampons. Okay. And I never quite knew what the deal was with that. So I'd say that's probably the earliest that it started for me. And I didn't really begin my journey on getting help until I got divorced. Oh. I actually got married when I was 22, and I had problems sexually in my marriage. And that's really how most of it showed up for me.
How long ago was that?
I first got married in 2005, and I didn't get divorced until 2015. Oh, okay. So to understand a little bit about my background in terms of sex and sexuality, it'll make the rest of my story make a little bit more sense if I share a little bit of that.
Absolutely.
I grew up very conservative Christian. In that household, in that realm, we didn't talk about sex or what it was like to become a woman, what the puberty process was like. It was kind of like, here's a book and go figure that out. In the church context, there was a lot of fear and shame surrounding, you know, you don't have sex until you're married. Right. No, no, no. It's bad. Was really the message that I received. Like, sex is bad. Sex is shameful. Being a sexual person is not a positive thing. Right. So that was my whole background going into marriage. You go from that context to then I'm 22 years old. I get married, and all of a sudden I've got to be okay being completely naked and having sex with my husband. That was a super hard and super scary transition. Like, what in the world? Like, I don't even know, like, what's going on. I don't even feel like I got good sex education either at home or at school, anything of that nature, because the school was also scary. The school was like, you're going to get an STD, like you could die.
So it's so funny that you say that. Well, not funny, haha, but have you seen Bridgerton on Netflix?
Okay. No, I haven't.
So this was set in the 1800s in London, and exactly how you went into your marriage is how these young women who were 18, 19, as soon as they became of age, they were like put on the market and they needed to marry. They got thrust into this relationship without knowing what sex was, where babies came from, what you're supposed to do. And it's just, it's sad that you watch this show and you're like, I mean, how do you live like that? And then here you are today expressing that, yeah, this still happens. This is going on. And now you're 22 in this marriage, going and having sex. And I'm sure you, like you said, you knew nothing. So you didn't know what it was supposed to feel like.
Right.
You know? So when you went and had sex and it hurt, you're like, okay, I guess this is just my plight. This is the burden of Eve. So,
yeah. I didn't understand. There were much learning that has happened with me along the way in terms of even just vaginal function and sexual function. I had to learn all of that after the fact and after I got my diagnosis. Sex was not happening in the very beginning. Okay. And so I was like, okay, things are not happening. Not sure how to change that. Eventually was able to get to the point where I was able to relax enough to have sex.
Let me ask you, do you think that in the beginning you might have been suffering from vaginismus? Like, was it not being able to penetrate, or were you just not trying and it just wasn't like the right time?
It's quite possible that I was suffering from some form of vaginismus. I also don't have a clear concept or timeline of how long I dealt with the lichen sclerosis. Mm-hmm. And so that was the challenge in terms of the process of getting the diagnosis. I was misdiagnosed as having vaginismus later on because someone didn't do their due diligence in terms of testing. But I'm not sure. I know that it took me a little while to actually be able to have full intercourse when I first got married. That wasn't something that happened right away.
And so, like you said, that negatively impacted your relationship?
Yes, it did. I think in the beginning, it was okay, and he was patient, and we were able to work through that issue. I don't blame my sexual issues, or our sexual issues, as I like to think of them, I don't blame just that single factor on the divorce. There were certainly other things that led to that. So after 9 years of marriage, he decides to leave. And the sexual issues had gotten really bad in the last 2 years in terms of the pain I was having. Now, it wasn't because, you know, everything was tightened up and we can, you know, but it now was, oh my gosh, I'm in so much pain and I don't even know why I'm in so much pain. Why am I having this experience? I had no idea until I went through that process.
Were you tearing at that time?
No.
Like, you didn't have any blood or tear or anything? It was just a lot of pain?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when was the first time you went to the doctor?
The funny thing about this whole experience was I thought this was a psychological issue.
Oh, let me tell you, you're not the first one to tell me that. So
yeah,
I completely understand that part.
The reason for that was because in my mind, I had been going to the doctor on a regular basis to get your well woman checkups. Mm-hmm. And none of the doctors had ever said, hey, this looks abnormal or something's not right here. Or I remember one time I was in a lot of pain and they were just kind of like, psh, you know, oh, well, welcome. I think the words were welcome to being a woman.
Wow.
No, that should not hurt.
Wow.
That was awful. So I didn't go back to that doctor. I was like, no, this is not okay.
I'll check that under things doctors say. That is ridiculous. Every time I hear something like that, it just makes my blood boil. That is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. And I knew that at this point, I knew there were certain lubricants that I just didn't respond to very well. And I kind of had to look at brands and different things and find what my body responded to. So I knew, you know, that I had some sensitivities. But in my mind, I thought, well, I'm going to these well women exams. No doctor has ever said something doesn't look right. So this must be all in my head. Like, this must be some kind of psychological problem that I have because I have this sordid past with sexual messages and I'm not comfortable and I'm not relaxed enough and I'm too anxious and sexually frigid. And that's why I'm having these problems. That even that explanation, as I say it now, doesn't make sense because I wanted to have sex. There wasn't a lack of desire. But every time I would try to, I was just in pain. And so then obviously that makes you not want to just because you're in pain.
Absolutely. And so during this time, were you talking to any family members, any elders in the church? Did you have anyone to go to?
No. I had so much shame at that point in my life surrounding this issue because here I had put all of the blame on myself. This is my fault. I'm the one that can't have sex. It's my problem. And because of that, because sex wasn't talked about in my family, I didn't feel like I could go to someone and say, hey, I'm having these issues with sex and I don't understand why or I don't know what's going on. Because for a long, long time, I didn't even feel comfortable talking to a doctor about it either. I had done some research online on vaginismus, and I had kind of self-diagnosed at that point. I was like, okay, well, maybe this is it. So it came with a couple books and these dilators, which some people may know about, the lovely dilators. So I was trying to self-treat before the divorce happened. I was trying to self-treat what I thought was my vaginismus. And some of that information certainly was good and helpful, but that wasn't what I needed because that wasn't the right diagnosis.
So while you're trying to self-diagnose, and obviously your husband at the time can tell that you're having an issue, is he supportive in trying to help you work through it? Or was he causing you also more stress, which is then going to exasperate your symptoms and then get you in that cycle?
I think he was just bamboozled by the whole situation. I think he was just so confused. So I really can't speak for him on what his processing of that. I do think that my perception is that he saw this as my problem. I didn't have the ability to advocate for myself, but I wish I could have said, hey, this is our problem. Because I know even though I may be the one with the issue, it's our sex life and we have to figure out how to make it work as a married couple. And so that unfortunately never happened. And I think he held in possibly some frustrations about that issue that he didn't necessarily share with me. And I would share in the conversations, you know, I'm concerned because I know that this is an important thing for marriage and this is an important thing for guys. And he would kind of blow that off and be like, you know, try to act like it wasn't a big deal, but I think it was, you know.
I definitely advocate for communication. If you are in a relationship and you have LS, you have to talk to your partner, or you don't know that you have LS yet, or you suspect it, or something's just wrong. Talk to your partner and be open to them talking to you back. Don't be defensive about it. Have that open dialogue, because that's the only way that you're going to move forward without the resentment, without the, you know, the anxiety of I'm not fulfilling my part, or is he going to leave me because of this or that. He needs to know where you are and you need to know where he is. And so that way you're working at this together, or else it can implode. Because we're not mind readers. They're not.
Sure.
We're not either. So definitely, I think that that's a big part of why diagnoses like this lead to divorce. Because your story, unfortunately, is not the first one, and I'm sure it's not going to be the last one that it leads to that. And like you said, the diagnosis is not the reason for the divorce. It's just highlighting a lot of the other issues that are already in the marriage or the relationship. And I think a lot of that can be overcome with communication. Obviously, communication is the number one in any relationship. You have to be able to talk to your partner. Now you get a divorce and you've been to the doctor. You feel like this is in your head. Do you go see a psychologist or psychiatrist, therapist, or what happens?
Well, as I was going through the divorce process, what was interesting was he decided he wanted to leave in January. And shortly before that, towards the end of the year, and this was right before 2015, mm-hmm. I had decided, even before he said he wanted a divorce, I said, I've got to go to a doctor. Like, this has gone on long enough. Like, I'm suffering here. I don't know what's going on with me, but I have to have an answer. So then he said, you know, I want a divorce. And I thought, well, I'm not going to be getting in a relationship with anybody. I'm not going to be having sex. But I want to know for me, because mm-hmm. I want to feel empowered about my own body and understanding what's happening to it and how did I get to this point.
Good for you.
Yeah. So I had been going to counseling already because of the relationship issues that I was dealing with and because of work stress and different things that had come up for me. So I was already seeing a counselor. So she kind of followed me through some of this process. I did eventually open up to her and tell her what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I went to a gynecologist and I saw like a nurse practitioner in the office, and she examined me and it was really quick. And she said, okay, well, we're going to send you to get a vaginal ultrasound, which to this day, I'm not really sure why they did that. I don't think she explained why that was. Okay. But they sent me for a vaginal ultrasound, which if you've ever had one of those, they are not fun. especially when you have LS, they're really not fun. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, the ultrasound technicians that I had were actually very compassionate and gentle, and they made me feel at ease. So that helped the process a little bit. Yeah. And then I was referred out for pelvic floor physical therapy.
Oh, that's good. For my listener who doesn't know what a vaginal ultrasound is, they stick this long wand that is the ultrasound
probe.
Yeah. And yeah. One end is like a bigger ball, and then you have like the stick part. They stick that up in you and they kind of move around in there so that they can see. So it's very similar to the outer ultrasound, but this time they're moving around inside of your vagina. So yeah, if you have LS or any kind of vulva issue or any kind of vaginal issue, that can be quite painful. So you started physical therapy?
So I started pelvic floor physical therapy, and she said, yeah, you know, it really seems like things are kind of isolated to this one side, and I think we can work through this and be able to get you to a better space. And she was pretty chill and good.
You only had issues on one side. What did she mean by that? Was it tightness or what was the issues that
she saw? I think so. It's like kind of when she was feeling around, she was just kind of like, okay, this side, and I don't remember if it was right or left. Let's say right side was okay. Okay, this side is okay. Like you're not having, because she would say, you know, are you having pain here? Are you having pain here? Are you having pain there? And so it seemed to her that the pain was only isolated to one area. It wasn't a global all over pain. Okay. So that probably also made kind of some of the picture confusing. And we would do some yoga poses. And then basically you would lay there and somebody would be putting their fingers in your vagina. Not to be crude, but that's the process.
Okay. That's what it is.
Feeling around. Yeah. And while they're talking to you about vacations and whatever else to try to put your mind at ease. I mean, she would just talk to me about all kinds of stuff, you know. Okay. So we were once again working with the lovely vaginal dilators, and they're basically pieces of plastic that are kind of shaped in different sizes to, you know, I guess replicate male genitalia.
Yeah.
But like we were
like a dildo. Now they do have silicone as well.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. I guess she was using most
like
of the
it was like a
right
hard plastic.
Yeah, the hard plastic. And they come like as small as like a finger, and then they, they grow in size. And as you open up, then you move up to the next size. And we will be talking to a pelvic floor physical therapist and learning about dilators at some point during the season. Just to explain, the pelvic floor physical therapist is not sticking their finger inside of you for pleasure reasons. They're sticking their fingers in there to relieve the pressure points, kind of like giving you an internal massage on your vagina, just as if a masseuse would massage your muscles on your shoulders or your back. They are giving you a massage on your vagina to release the tension in those pelvic floor muscles. So that's the reason that they have to stick their fingers, or they use the dilators to hit those pressure points.
So we're working with the dilators, and we were able to get up to a certain size. And I said, it's burning. I mean, that's all I can tell you is I just am having burning sensations. And she's like, well, that shouldn't be happening. I mean, you shouldn't be having burning sensations. I don't know, you know, I don't know why that would be going on. And she says, well, you know, at this point, I'm inclined to refer you back to the gynecologist that sent you here. And I said, but they sent me to you.
Right.
Like, what?
I
what do you mean?
That
you're going to send me back?
Yes. Yes.
So there was also this concurrent process that was going on. So when they had done the vaginal ultrasound, they found a cyst.
Okay.
So they told me, I had seen the nurse practitioner originally, and they said, well, you're going to have to see the doctor when you go back again, because if you have to have surgery, the nurse practitioners, they don't do that. That would be the doctor. You have to see him.
Right.
This is after 6 weeks of pelvic floor physical therapy, at least two vaginal ultrasounds. I go back into the office with the doctor, and I say to him, I'm frustrated.
Yeah.
I'm not getting results. I don't even care about the cyst. I'm like, let the cyst rupture or whatever. Like, I don't, that's not why I'm here. I didn't know about that thing beforehand. Who cares?
Right.
So his ears are perking up. He's leaning forward. He's like, okay, you're not getting what you're needing. Like, what is it? You know, what is it again? And I said, well, I came in because I was having this pain when I was having sex. And I was like, we have apparently not been able to get to the bottom of this.
Right.
So he's like, okay, well, let me examine you. And I thought, like, this is the face. It's like,
yeah,
are you for real? Do I have to have one more person touching me there? Oh, gosh.
And I'm sure for you, coming from the background of being in the church and not having even spoken about that area of your body or being open about that area of the body, to have so many people invading that private space, just even mentally, is, I'm sure, is like a hurdle for you that, okay, I have to relax enough to let another stranger touch me down there and to have another stranger look at me down there.
Yeah. When I was going through the process of pelvic floor, I remember that I would go there in the afternoon. And then after that, I was just kind of done for the day. I couldn't really do anything else. I was just trying to mentally and emotionally process what I was going through at the time. But I think going through all that, the silver lining is that I was able to get more comfortable through, I guess, exposure. Yeah. I was able to get more comfortable with, hey, the vagina is a part of your body that needs attention and it's okay. And there's nothing bad about it. And there's nothing bad about being female. And I should be able to say the word vagina like I say the word hamburger, like just flat. It's a body part.
Yeah. Well, good for you, because a lot of women can't make that leap, especially with that strict upbringing. You know, there's just that I'm going to go to hell if I let somebody touch me down there that's not my husband or that I'm not married to. So I can see how that would be very draining to have to work through those mental loops and hoops while you're going through that.
The problem was that when on our last visit, when she said she was going to refer me back, I was just pushing her for answers, which I shouldn't have done. But I said, well, I mean, like, what else could it be? And she was like, well, some people are just smaller than others. I mean, some people just have a smaller vaginal vault than others. And I thought, oh my gosh, this woman just told me my vagina is too small. Like, that scarred me. Like, had to go to therapy to heal from that. And it was awful. That was another awful thing that was said to me.
And again, you're not the first one that I've heard that from.
Yeah.
I've heard doctors have said that to women. Oh, your vagina is too small. You're having sex with penises that are too big. You need to have sex with smaller penises. I'm like, what? Don't say that.
What I learned in my research about the vagina was that some of the muscular structure is very similar or the same to what's in our stomach. So just like our stomach can expand to hold food, our vagina can expand to hold a penis. Right. And that set me free in a lot of ways. So I hope that that sets somebody else free that's watching this.
Yes. So let's go back. Now the doctor's examining you. You're telling him, I need you to give me an answer.
Yeah,
basically, you're saying, I need an answer before I leave this office. Mm-hmm. What is going on? So now he's perked up. He's looking.
Yeah, I will never forget this. He says, I believe to the nurse, he said, give me a Q-tip. And had that man not had a Q-tip, I would have thought he had a tack that he was putting on me. That was the pain that I was having. It felt like somebody had just stuck a tack in that area. Oh. And he was like, you know, and then we're going through the, does this hurt? Does this hurt again? And I was like, yeah, that really hurts. Yeah. So he's like, okay, I think I might know what's going on. He's like, go ahead and get dressed and meet me in my office, which like never happens in the doctor's office, right? Like, meet me in my office.
Now, I'm sure you're probably thinking, like, oh my God, what is it, cancer? Why can't he just tell me right here? Because, you know, right away, our minds just jump to cancer. It's like, what else could it be?
Right, right. So he sits me down, and there were a couple things that he explained to me. One of them actually had to do with the shape of my pubic bone.
Okay.
And he explained to me, he's like, okay, this is the way that your pubic bone is shaped. And that information was actually pretty helpful for me because it explained why certain positions were not doable for me and why certain positions had caused me pain in the past. So that piece of information was very helpful. And then I don't remember if he used specific words or if he said, you know, I think that maybe you might have a skin condition, but I don't really know that much about this. Whatever he told me, he said, you know, that's not my experience. I don't really know a whole lot about it. I think
to him,
listen, for admitting he didn't know.
Give that man a round of applause. Yes. For not just saying, oh, okay, well, in his mind, I don't know about this. So we're going to just, you know, scooch that to the side and we're going to say it's this. Kudos to him.
Yeah, he didn't make anything up. And I think that was because his specialty was delivering babies. Mm. And he was a really great baby delivery person. And he's since now retired. But I think that this issue of diagnosing lichen sclerosis wasn't in his wheelhouse.
Right.
So I made the decision on my own to try to find someone who is a little bit more of a vaginal specialist. And that got me over to the Center for Pelvic Health.
Okay.
And I thought, okay, like here's the third doctor's office that I'm in over this one issue. Mm. But I guess the main thing I would tell people is I'm not one to give up easily. I'm somewhat of a bulldog. And once I get going on something, that's what I'm focused on, and I will run after that, you know, it forsaking all else pretty much.
Yeah. That's great though, because in this sense, it propelled you to get an answer. Come hell or high water, you were going to find out what is going on.
Mm-hmm. So I went in to see this doctor, and he was just so gentle and so kind. The most wonderful thing he did for me was there was a nurse in the room, and I don't know what those what the medical term is, you know, the things that they stick in you and they spread out.
The speculum.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
So the nurse has the speculum kind of like on the table, like ready to give it to him. And he's like, we're not going to use that because she's not going to tolerate that very well. And I could have cried. Like, that was just so compassionate for him to know and understand that. And it was, you know, very similar. Any kind of spreading that caused pain. And so that was just really nice that he knew why I was there, the kind of pain that I was having. He asked a lot of questions and he examined me and he told me, what I want to do is a skin biopsy. I think I know what this is, but I don't want to say until we get the results back, and then I'll bring you back and we'll talk about it. And I thought, wow, somebody that's calm, gentle, this is like an answer to prayer. This is exactly what I needed at this moment.
And that's the difference of going to a regular gynecologist and going to a pelvic specialist, a gynecologist, that this is what they do. This is what they study. This is who they see. I've had an interview with Dr. Jill Kraft, and this is her bread and butter. She sees lichen sclerosis patients, and her demeanor and the way she practices medicine is different than any other gynecologist that I've ever spoken to. And it's because they do get that empathy. They know what we've gone through. They know the pain that we experience and the frustrations. Because she said it, by the time the patients get to her, they've been to 3-4 other doctors. And they've been years looking for help. And so she has that empathy for them. So it sounds like you found the right person. That's amazing.
Yeah, there was something super healing, I think, about those two people being male, those last two doctors being male. There was something therapeutic for me about that, to know that I could have a male doctor examine me and that was okay, and that they would be kind and gentle with my vaginal health. That was super healing and helpful for me. So I had come back from the biopsy and he said, okay, this is lichen sclerosis. And of course I was like, who?
Right.
can you spell that for me?
Right.
What in the world is that? So he said, similar to what the pelvic floor physical therapist had told me, he said, it seems to be isolated to this one side of your vaginal area. And
so did he explain what lichen sclerosis was? Did he say it was, you know, incurable?
You know, I don't think he used the word incurable, which was nice. Okay. That was compassionate for me. Yeah. What he said was, you know, this is really our first course of action is to try this steroid cream. Okay. And he said, if that doesn't work, He said there are some other creams and different things that people use. However, there's a machine that's a laser called the Mona Lisa Smile. And he said it's actually for vaginal atrophy. Mm-hmm. But if you don't do well with the steroid creams, you can try the laser. And that, he said, it actually works better for lichen sclerosis than it does for vaginal atrophy. So I had hope there that, okay, if this first course of action doesn't work for me, then I'm going to find some way to pay the money, because of course it's not covered by insurance and is thousands of dollars, and to find some way to beg, borrow, and steal, and not steal, but
and get the money. That was really important. And I teach that in my group, that the fear and anxiety that comes with LS, a lot of it is the unknown. A lot of it is the not having the information of how am I going to take care of myself, not being confident in your doctor, in their knowledge, in their care for you, not having a plan of action. Once you have the knowledge, you have a team around you that you feel confident in, and you have a plan of action for when you flare, what your treatment process is going to be, what, you know, if you tear, if let's say whatever it is, once you have a plan, then that anxiety no longer exists, because you know what you're going to do. And so his approach to you was very kind, and he gave you all the tools that you needed so that you didn't go into that fear and anxiety zone that unfortunately a lot of us do go into, because we're not getting that level of care. So definitely try to find a vulva specialist to see you, to care for you, because it makes a world of difference.
Absolutely. He was the only one that I had found in the Nashville metro area, because I'm in a pretty decently sized area. I mean, if you're in a small town, I imagine you might have to travel a little ways to get to somebody that can meet with you and know what they're talking about.
I'll have his information in the show notes of this episode. If you're in the Nashville area, you can look in the show notes, get his information. So he gives you the cream and tells you, okay, this is plan A, but if this doesn't work, we do have a plan B. And he's not telling you that at this time that it's not an incurable disease. He's giving you a sense of ease, but he's answering enough questions that I'm guessing you're not running to Dr. Google and Googling what is lichen sclerosis.
Oh, no, I definitely did that. I'm definitely a Googler. I definitely did. And I found websites that had certain tips on them. You know, I'm trying to think of what some of them were, like wearing cloth underwear instead of like polyester, making sure that you don't stay in wet clothes, those types of general over-the-counter advice. And I realized actually through the online research, I thought, wow, some women have this probably way worse than I do, because some women are affected outside of the sexual realm with it and have pain sometimes all the time. And so that helped me realize that I was fortunate in the sense that I didn't have as severe of a case as other people had, because mine seemed pretty isolated.
When you were doing your Google search, you had to have seen that this is not curable. You went like more than 10 years at this point now with this pain, trying to find answers. And now at the end of this journey, you're finding out that it's not the end of the journey. This is just the beginning of the next step of the journey.
Sure.
So how did that work for you mentally?
Mentally, I think I had to work through the sense of being broken or damaged in some way, and fighting against that mindset. Like, I'm not this condition. Mm-hmm. I have this condition. Those are two huge statements, but it's like something you have to let yourself really sink into and marinate that this is a part of my life. This doesn't have to define me or my life. It definitely was a concern for me in terms of getting in another relationship because I got divorced when I was in my early 30s. Right. And I thought, okay, statistically speaking, I might want to get married between now and when I die.
Right. Right. And I would like to have pain-free sex.
Yes. That would be awesome. So I used the steroid cream and I came back.
Which one he gave you?
I think it was clobetasol.
Clobetasol. Okay. So yeah. He started you off with clobetasol.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I used that for... I want to say I did. I think I had to use it twice a day in the first month. And then maybe the second month was once a day. And I came back to the doctor's office.
Okay.
And I really didn't know, like, I don't know, is this going to work? Did I clear it up? Now, granted, I'm in a space and a place in my life where I'm not having sex with anybody. Right. I'm not even interested in dating anybody.
Right.
So in terms of like the relationship pressure was off at that point. This is more about Carrie's journey of discovering her body and what works for it.
Right.
So I came back in and he said, you know, it looks good. And I was like, oh, it looks good. Okay, cool. Yeah. And so the story of seriously dating doesn't start until end of 2000 and is that 18? Is that right? Okay. Yeah,
so you end had of 3 years. So in that 3 years, then now you have this amazing doctor. You have a cream that seems to be working. You can't test it unless it's well, you could test it with like the dilators a little bit, I guess.
Right, yeah.
Did you experiment with that at all?
I did a little bit.
But it's not going to really tell you, like, you know, getting down with the nitty gritty. So when you meet this new man that you're starting to get serious with, how did you approach it as far as discussing it with him and bringing it up that, hey, I have this condition and this might be an issue? Was that something that you struggled with, or how did that go?
Before I had that conversation, I got back into therapy because I knew that I wanted to date again, but I was super scared of getting close to anybody because I was afraid of getting hurt again, just from the emotional standpoint.
Okay.
And that therapist helped me as well with the emotional component of thinking about having sex again and all the anxiety that went with that of like, am I going to be able to have sex without pain? Am I going to be able to get to that point? What is that going to look like for me mentally, emotionally, physically? He helped me so much recognize some of the difficult points in my past where I had negative sexual messages come across. One of them was a memory from middle school where we had gone to an assembly or something of that nature for health class. And I remember this very vividly, just slideshow after slideshow of men with genital warts. And yeah, they showed us they showed us pictures of penises and vaginas that had STDs. It was very, very scary for me. I was a sensitive kid. It traumatized me, really and truly. That traumatized me.
Oh my God, only in the 80s.
So yeah. we went back through that memory I won't go into all the therapeutic techniques of it, but essentially it's a very body focused therapy called somatic experiencing, where you're focusing on certain areas of your body and memories that come up related to that. And I said, okay, I'm in that class and I'm seeing all these pictures and I'm feeling this way. And I'm like, this isn't even for me. Like, I wasn't the kid out behind the bleachers having sex. I barely knew about sex at this point. Like nobody was talking to me. I didn't have a context for even these pictures.
Right.
And we got to a point and he said, because I'm a Christian and I was working with a Christian therapist, he said, can you just give those pictures to Jesus? And can you just say, those are not for me? And I did. I was like, okay. I was like, Jesus can have the pictures. And this isn't for me. These messages weren't for me. They were for other kids that I guess needed to be scared into not having sex. But that was just one of memory that we worked through, and there were some others, but related to past experiences, and that helped on the mental emotional side. So when I got serious with my husband now, Steve, we were talking about getting married. Okay. And it was actually 2019, late 2019 that we started dating. Okay. And it got to a point where I knew it was getting a little bit more serious and that we were talking about getting engaged and getting married one day. And I said, hey, there's just something I need to tell you. And there's something I need you to know about me. And it's really important. And he was like, okay, you know, he's very chill. He's very laid back. Just like, lay it on me. What is it? Mm-hmm. So I told him, I said, hey, I have this vaginal condition and it's called lichen sclerosis and it's chronic. And I think that it's managed now, but it was really showing up and causing problems when I was having sex. And I explained some of the background story to him. Mm-hmm. I told him, I'm not sure how this is going to go. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to have sex. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to have sex without pain.
Right.
This is something that you need to know about going into this relationship, because I need to know that you're okay with that.
Right.
And he was incredibly gracious and incredibly loving. He told me that, you know, Carrie, there's multiple ways to be intimate with someone, and we'll just take it one step at a time. And if you tell me like something's hurting, that you're uncomfortable, we'll just stop what we're doing and back up, and you know, we can try again another time. Or he said, I haven't had sex in a long time either. I don't know how it's going to go for me. It's okay.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. I'm sure that just opened you up even more. How long, honestly, if you can remember, did you think about this conversation before you actually had the conversation? Did you like replay it in your mind? Like, okay, this is what I'm going to say. Or were you just like, you know what? I'm just going to tell him. And the next day, the next time you saw him, you said, okay, look, this is what it is.
I think it was one of those things, not that I played the conversation in my head, but I knew I had to tell him mm-hmm. as things were getting serious, because that was only fair to him, that I didn't think that he would walk away and say, no, that's too much for me, because of the closeness of our relationship emotionally.
Right.
But it's only fair if you're going to get in a relationship with someone and you're bringing some type of
absolutely
baggage, for lack of a better way to say, to absolutely the relationship. They need to know about that. Like, hey, what am I getting into?
Exactly.
So it was really hard for me to tell him. And I think when we had the conversation, he was like, wow, this was a really big thing that you told me. He recognized how awesome, what of a big deal it was, and really was kind of like praising me. He's so wonderful.
Oh my God. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So now he's accepting, and I take you waited till you got married to have sex.
We did. Yeah,
and
we did.
So not to be all up in your business, but how was it the first time? Was it painful? Did you have any issues?
You know, I was so scared of being in pain that I actually bought this numbing cream.
Oh,
it's like lidocaine,
yes,
5% numbing cream. And I thought, yeah, well, you know, feeling nothing would be better than feeling being in pain.
Yeah, I did an episode last season how we stop ourselves from having sex. We suppress our libido just because of the fear of having pain, the fear of setting off a flare, the fear of tearing, to the point where we don't even let ourselves be in that position because the fear is so strong. And our subconscious takes over. That fear just kicks in, and that, you know, that, what is it, fight or flight signal just kind of just like, okay, yep, we're not even going to even put ourselves in the position where we can even try to have sex because we're so scared that of the pain. And you, so when you're saying that, I get it. I totally get it. Yeah. So, but you bought the cream, you toughed through it. Did you feel anything?
No, I did. Okay. I had kind of like practiced with the cream and lubricants and the dilators before we had sex for the first time. I was using some of those things on my own. So I was communicating to Steve about it, saying, you know, I think I kind of have a system of where what will work for me, because even with the cream, it doesn't completely numb you. You can still, you know, feel things. But actually, I've gotten to the point where I don't even use the cream anymore. I kind of like just decided, I got to a point where I got brave enough and I said, let's try not to use the cream, you know, and let's just kind of go.
With the cream, was there pain? Because you had not had sex at this point for four or five years. Right?
Yeah. It had been a long time.
Mm-hmm. That's a long time. If even without LS, things kind of tighten up again. And then you're talking about with LS, you really run the risk of things tightening up. But are you still using your steroid at this time? What did the doctor have you do after those 2 months where you were using the steroid? He had you stop or continue?
He basically told me that if I had another flare-up or I sensed I was having pain in that area or symptoms, that I could start using it again. And he was like, you know, just kind of test it out. And he said, you know, a lot of times we tell people not to be on them for long-term because it can cause vaginal atrophy. And they can also cause, overuse of steroids can also cause external yeast infection, so you have to be somewhat careful about that as well. But I had not really been using the steroid cream at this point. So my biggest probably change that I made in my life in terms of after my diagnosis, I used to love to chill in the bathtub and just kind of like soak in there and with my little Epsom salts. I don't do that anymore. It just dries out my vaginal area too much, which is kind of a bummer. I just had to find other ways to relax. So no more soaking in the bathtub for me is probably my biggest lifestyle change that I've made.
Okay.
And no hot tubs. I don't rarely I might stick my feet in or something of that nature, but I try not to get in hot tubs because that's another thing that can irritate me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. So right now you're not using any kind of steroid or anything. You're not treating at all.
No. Nope.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so now you're pain-free.
Mm-hmm.
So almost 2 years now.
Well, I got married actually in October of, we started dating in 19, but I got married actually October of last year, so I'm pretty much a newlywed still.
You are a newlywed. Okay. Yeah. So you went from the lidocaine to no lidocaine in what, 2-3 months?
Yeah, doing good.
You're doing good. Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Are you still seeing the same doctor still?
I actually haven't been back for a follow-up since I haven't had issues at this juncture in this point in time, then I haven't actually followed up with him.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, can I just say, and this is totally just me putting out the information that I know, with all of my studies and everything, LS can come back silently and you will not know it until it's too late and you have a new symptom. So even though you don't have symptoms, it's still a good idea to get checked out just to get the all clear, because you don't want it to develop into something worse when you could have caught it earlier. you know, especially since you're not using any kind of steroid or anything like that. Now, mind you, your symptoms are way milder than a lot sure. of us, but just to, you know, put it out there, I have to say it. I definitely recommend, especially for my listener, you want to stay being looked at least. If you decide not to use your treatment anymore, that's your business, but at least stay being monitored. So that's amazing. So now you're happily married and newlywed, having some pain-free sex, and you're all good. That was a journey.
It was a journey.
Going from, you know, being raised in the church where you didn't even know what a penis was, and then, you know, middle school, they're showing you these pictures.
Graphic images.
That traumatized you for life, you know, and then to where you are now. And now you're a counselor for anxiety and OCD. That's amazing that now you turn around and you help people with their anxieties and to get to a place of acceptance and resilience and where they can move on with their life. So you have a podcast as well.
I do.
Where you help people with their anxieties and their OCD. So tell us a little bit about your podcast.
My podcast is called Hope for Anxiety and OCD, and we are all about reducing shame, increasing hope, and developing healthier connections with God and others. So we're focused on the Christian community because when I was looking for resources for some of my clients who were carrying a lot of shame about even having anxiety or OCD in the church or as a Christian, I wanted to be able to give them some resources. And I just didn't feel like there were a lot of people speaking into that space of being a strong clinical presence, but also a strong spiritual Christian presence. So I try to marry both of those on my show. And I interview pastors about spiritual issues, such as prayer. I've also interviewed several counselors about different types of counseling that are helpful for anxiety. So all kinds of different things.
Cool. And that's Hope for Anxiety and OCD podcast. It's available
wherever you can get your podcast. We're an audio only, so we're not on YouTube. But other than that, we're everywhere else.
And do you have a website?
Yes, it is hopeforanxietyandocd.com.
Perfect. And so if anybody wants to reach out to you and, you know, maybe ask you about your treatment or your journey, or maybe even just to work with you, where can they go?
They can go through the website and on the contact form. I also have the Facebook and the Instagram. They can message me through there or follow me if they so desire. And I have my counseling practice for anybody that's in Tennessee is 100% virtual, but it's called By the Well Counseling. So
cool. Yeah. And for my listening audience who's not on YouTube, she is Hope for Anxiety and OCD podcast on Instagram and Hope for Anxiety and OCD on Facebook. And the bythewellcounseling.com is for the counseling. If you want to work with her, you can head up either one of those, and all of her information will be in the show notes. And for my listeners to the podcast, no worries, I got you. So head on over to lichensclerosispodcast.com/hopeforanxiety. Make it real easy, and you will be able to find all of Carrie's information. So Carrie, thank you so much for just sharing everything with us. I want to say thank you one more time to Carrie for sharing her amazing story. She has been through so much, starting off not knowing anything about sex or what she was getting into in a marriage, to where she is now, happily married, enjoying pain-free sex, and all because she did the work and she learned not only how to love herself, but how to accept herself, accept her diagnosis, and then allow someone else to accept her and her diagnosis.
It's truly a beautiful love story with a happy ending. I wanted to bring you this story to let you know that it is possible. And yes, it's a lot of work, but I know you can do it. I know that you have it in you, and it may take therapy and learning everything you can to make your disease manageable, but I know you can do it. And if you need any kind of support along the way, I got you, girl. Join us at the Lichen Sclerosis virtual meetups every other Saturday from 2 to 4 and 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and let us support you. We are on all stages of this walk, of this journey, and you just got to jump in and let us help you. So sign up for notifications and updates at lichensclerosispodcast.com/connect. lichensclerosispodcast.com/connect. And the next meetup is on February the 20th. So go sign up now so you can get those updates. I want to give a birthday shout out to one of the ladies in our group, Manuela. Happy birthday. It's coming up in a few days. And I want to give a birthday shout out to my little girl whose birthday is the same day as Manuela's, Brianna. Mommy loves you. And you are going to be an amazing, strong woman. And I cannot wait to see it. So I hope you have an amazing rest of your week. And I will talk to you next time. Bye.